This is the SML Podcast.
Should probably start the show, huh?
It's okay. I'm just going to, as the night goes on, I'm just going to devolve into kind of more of a sleep-deprived stupor. So just don't mind me.
Even better, man. Even better. On that note, what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining me this week, Kunal Majmudar. How are you doing?
Howdy, sir. How everybody?
How's it going, man? How's things?
Amazing. It's been a little while since I've been on the show, so thanks for having me back.
February was the last time you were on. You were on talking about some weird game called Pixel Noir.
Yeah, that was right, I think, when we first announced that we were working with a publisher. And man, time has really flown since then. It's like crazy. I can't believe it's the end of the year.
So, for the people who don't know what Pixel Noir is, tell us, what is this game?
So Pixel Noir is a turn-based kind of SNES-inspired RPG. And the game is modeled after sort of film noir-type styling. So you're a detective, and you go around solving cases. And there's actually a whole introduction to the game, which I'm not going to ruin in case anybody – there's maybe might be one, like, one person that plays this. So I'm not going to ruin this for like John, who ends up playing this or something, but you essentially there's a whole pre-story where bad stuff happens, and it might be a root cause for it. So you go off on your merry way investigating things and finding friends and just exploring this big huge town called Pinnacle City. There's also an epidemic of this drug going around town called Pixel. And it's just kind of a really cool lifelong dream that me and my partner, Len, have had. We co-founded the company together around kind of building a sort of a JRPG type of a game from the ground up.
And the funny thing is, if we have any really longtime listeners of the show, like, you've been a part of this show dating back to our very first episodes. Like, you had our very first theme song was from you.
That's right.
You were our guest on episodes 3 and 4 and many other times over the years. You first talked about Pixel Noir on this show. You took Tim from this show and hired him at Sword Tech, which does he still work with you?
Oh yeah. Yep. I just talked to him the other day.
Because I haven't heard from him in God knows how long. And every time I do, it's always about photography. So I didn't even know if he was still working with you or if he moved on from that.
I feel like he talks about photography more to me than anything too, so don't worry.
But we've been with you as you've shown off the game at different events and different conventions and whatnot. We were there with you when you announced you found a publisher. You came on to talk about the game with Xander from Badland Games. And now you're still here. Where the fuck is the game, man? Bullshit.
I swear, I'm good for it. I swear.
This is bullshit. It's been years. What the fuck?
Dude, you're telling me. No, it's actually been a really cool process. It's a massive scale game, right? So it's like a full JRPG scale game with like a ton of side quests, and then there's even a new game plus mode where there's, you know, you can actually play through the game and certain events unlock, etc. So it's just a huge scale of a game for a tiny fledgling team like ours, but. We're making great progress. We've been trying to keep our backers updated. We got funded on Kickstarter a couple years back. So hopefully people have been enjoying the alpha. And I can't commit to a date, but in the very, very, very near future, we're going to be releasing our beta demo, which we're really excited about. It looks super slick. If anybody has played the alpha demo, it's going to kind of be like a continuation of that story, but with a ton of new features. The card game is in, so you can kind of play that mini game, and it's totally coming to life, and it's feeling really, really cool.
Did you finally change the sausage vendor's name to Joe?
His name is Joe. His name is Joseph Camisa.
Nice.
Like, it's
about time.
He's in there.
Been saying that again. You've been saying that for years, that I'm the sausage vendor. And every time I see it, it's not my name.
You are. There's only one sausage vendor on this call, Joe.
So what is the status on the game? Like, are you guys anywhere close to release? Is this something we could see next year?
Oh, it's definitely something we're going to see next year. We put out a press release, I'd say, in over the summer at some point. I can't remember if it was May, June, something like that. That we would be releasing early 2018. So that's still the plan. Somewhere in, you know, Q1-ish is going to be the release date. So we're still gearing up towards that. We have a few really cool announcements coming out too around what's going to be supported at launch. I think people are going to be really happy with what we come up with too.
Platform
wise and maybe more. So I think we're still pulling together that communication plan and just nailing some stuff, some like last minute details down. But yeah, I think I'm hoping people will be really happy with what we put out there.
I'm excited, man. It's been a long time coming.
Oh, it's going to be like a huge, huge dream come true. I mean, during this project, there's been like, I think I've moved three times. This past summer, I got engaged to the love of my life.
Aww, and I love you too.
We're to Joe. I got engaged to my fiance Katie, and so like I don't even know how many different things have happened throughout this project, but it's been a long time coming, and I'm really excited to see it launch next year.
It's crazy. We'll have developers on the show all the time, and we're like, oh yeah, how long has your game been in development? And they'll be like, well, the concept first started like 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm just sitting here like, yeah, so did Kunal's.
It's crazy. The concept was actually the easy part of this whole thing. Like the concept, getting the concept made, is fairly straightforward. The tough part, for any startup is really getting that funding. That took us a few years to crack, and getting the right team where like you're making steady progress. Unless of course you have enough, funding to pay everybody full time, which we didn't have. We had some Kickstarter funding. So people were contract for us, which means that, we were making progress at a slower but steady pace, compared to like, you know, I don't know, Visceral Games or whatever, right? Like Naughty Dog, who pays people like ridiculous amounts of dollars to just crunch through the night every day.
I don't know if I would compare yourself to Visceral Games, man.
Yeah, maybe not a good idea.
Yeah, let me compare myself to the company that just got shut down the other week.
Yeah, that was not a great call, but yeah.
Proud of you, man.
Yeah. Hey, I aim high. I'd say, you know, small but mighty team, but that, man, that second piece, getting the funding and getting the right team pulled together, that took us a few years to really crack. So, we've been in development officially for about 2 years, 2.5 years, I guess now.
Damn.
It'll be about that, a little over 2.5 by the time we're done. So maybe just under that, but yeah, it's crazy. Cause when you think about it, it'll be about 7 years since we first had the idea, and Len and I kind of started sketching out the initial concepts for the game. But really, you know, four and a half of those 7 years were spent in ideation, searching for funding, getting the Kickstarter, et cetera. So like that hurdle took the longest for sure.
And you didn't just go for a Kickstarter once. You guys, your first time through it failed.
Yeah. Yeah, that was crazy. I've written a postmortem. Actually, if anybody tweets at me, I'm happy to share it or to even to tweet at the Sword Tech Games, Twitter or on Facebook. But, there's quite a few lessons that we learned from that. And, actually we almost quit, which would have been interesting because at that point we had sunk a lot of money personally, Len and I, into the project. So, when our first Kickstarter failed, we were tempted to be like, well, bad investment, move on. but then we kind of like really sat back, took stock of everything. I really started to analyze the stuff. And so, like I said, there's a postmortem presentation, happy to share with anybody. Hopefully it's helpful. I usually lecture with it if people ask me to talk about how to get your game funded on Kickstarter or something like that. So, there's a ton of lessons learned that hopefully I can pass on to other people. But yeah, no, we went back and we rebooted the whole thing, started from scratch, completely redid the entire, way we were presenting the game. We went back and really tightened up and buttoned up our demo and made it public and just did a number of other things. And we hit 200% of our goal, 206% of our goal to be exact. So we were really happy second time around. But boy, that was scary the first time.
What did you change from the first Kickstarter to the second? Like, did you adjust your expectations of what you guys can do? I'm pretty sure you guys changed a lot of the rewards the second time around, like less focus on crazy ass physical stuff. I think that's one of the problems a lot of Kickstarters face is that they promise all these insane rewards that you can't really follow through on.
Yeah, there's, for sure. That's a huge problem. So we just did a ton of changes. Like we did, not only did we change it from, physical to digital rewards, but we also did a number of other things. Like we focused on the actual the environment of like Pinnacle City and the lore of the city and the characters in it. We focused a lot more on getting the rewards tiering to be correct. So like it's really important to price that rewards tier the right way. You can't have these like crazy gaps in the tier. Like one tier is like $1 and then your next tier is like $75. Like that doesn't work. So you have to price that out the right way. And we learned more is the demo. Like
you just cut out for like 5 seconds there.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you again now.
Okay.
Stop downloading porn, Kunal. What are you doing, man?
No, I'm never. No, I was just saying that the other big thing we did was like actually have a demo. So if you're gonna have a Kickstarter and you're gonna put your game out there and you're starting from scratch, you're not a well-known game designer or developer, you're not Project Phoenix or anything like that, where you have all these other games to pull from, like us. If you're kind of brand new, you definitely need to have a demo that showcases the proof of concept to show that you can develop something, you can put it out there. That was huge. And then the other big thing, I guess, is that we didn't really, for the first Kickstarter, we really worked to a deadline. We launched at PAX East, and like the first person that came up to our booth, like literally hit the launch Kickstarter button. And
cool.
It was great, but because of the PAX East deadline, I'd say we were 70 to 80% ready with the Kickstarter because we were crunching to get it done in time. So second time around, we really just took our time with it. We didn't have any arbitrary deadlines for ourselves. We just kind of waited until we were happy with it and then launched it.
And it made sure the world shit was ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Go figure. When things are ready to go, they're easier, huh?
You know, it was a hard lesson learned, I'll tell you that.
So when it was finally kickstarted, I know that platforms were stretch goals. Did any of that stuff change when you guys hooked up with Badland? Like, did platforms change? Did potential platforms become a reality? Did any platforms get dropped? I know way back in the, 1800s when the Kickstarter happened, the Switch was still a thing, or the Wii U was still a thing, but now it's the Switch. Are you guys looking into that? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, we are looking into the Switch. And actually it wasn't even Wii U at that point. I think it was still, was it the Wii at that point? I don't remember, but DS was potentially, was one of the rewards that got unlocked. So, we did take a look at that. However, that's a much more difficult nut to crack because that is sort of, it's on a lonely island by itself where you kind of have to rebuild the engine, within the DS. And it's not like we can just, port it from Unity. So we're trying to figure out what to do there. But, yeah, Badland came in like gangbusters and really helped us out with a lot of this stuff. So, they're helping us out with, getting the, proper porting support. So before we were just going to launch on a few platforms and then start launching sequentially. Badlands has committed, dev dollars to get us, a porting team that's actually going to help us launch on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Yay. PS Vita, all at launch.
Oh my God, you guys did not cancel the Vita version?
No.
Holy shit. No way. Like, everybody is ditching the Vita lately. I don't know if it's because they, Sony has completely given up on the platform and everyone's starting to eye up the Switch now. It's good to hear of someone that's like, yeah, we're sticking with the Vita.
Oh, we promised it. And we actually, Vita's kind of like an RPG machine. I unfortunately don't have one. I've been meaning to get one forever, but, I know that for sure it has some amazing games on it that, I've been dying to play, like the Tales games and stuff like that. So,
I say it all the time on this show, for as much as I hate the fucking PS4, I love my Vita. It's such a great machine.
And it's cool. I really do like some of the cross-platform features that they have now. So, like, we definitely are not ditching the Vita. Actually, I made double, triple sure that Badlands was going to support it, and they were happy to. So I think it'll be really cool. I think they were surprised that we pushed so hard for Vita, but they're supporting us on it. So, yeah, we're going to have that. We are taking a look at Switch. More to come on that soon, as soon as we kind of figure out, if. And so we're taking a look at it to be there. The other thing Badland is doing is really helping us with marketing and potentially even localization, although I probably shouldn't talk about that either at this point. So just going to leave it there.
But as of right now, it's pretty much just confirmed to be in English, right?
Right.
Or Swahili.
It's just going to be in sign language the whole game.
Oh my God, that'd be amazing. Instead of text, it's just like pictures of hands of the words.
It's like motion capture of like some dude doing all the different symbols on the side, bottom right of the game.
It's like, why did you decide to go with that? It's for the hearing impaired. Why didn't you just use text?
No, you see?
Oh my God, you keep breaking up. Seriously, what the hell's going on, Kunal?
Oi. Oi. Hang on.
Did you fix your shit?
I think so. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Hopefully that's better. Sorry, maybe my Wi-Fi was going in and out, so.
Maybe. You bastard.
I'm using my data rates now, baby.
Fuck yeah, man. It's worth it. Oh man, so is 3DS and mobile still happening? Because I know those stretch goals were met, or are you guys reevaluating what's going on with them?
Yeah, so mobile is definitely going to happen. So 3DS and mobile, we've sort of since 3DS specifically is right now, like I said, a lonely island off by itself. We're trying to assess best path of approach for that. We haven't given up on it, but it is right now, it seems pretty not feasible, but officially we haven't really given up on it. We're just trying to figure out how to possibly make that work. That might be a kind of a roadmap item where we launch on all the other platforms first, and then once we have the funding needed, because at that point Unity had announced that they would release integration with DS, but that never came out. Like they just announced it and then nothing ever happened with it. So we were, the devs were kind of left in the dark on that one. So right now we're trying to figure out what to do with that one. Mobile for sure. That'll be a little bit further out. Probably, like I said, we'll put the game out on the major platforms first. And then once we get it out on those platforms, then we'll start building the mobile versions.
Makes sense. So with the release of the Xbox One X this week, I got to know, are you guys eyeing up any kind of like 4K or HDR enhancements for the Xbox One X or for the PS4 Pro, anything like that? Just some 4K pixels?
Yeah, I was going to say, those are some really big pixels, man. So right now, if you play the alpha or beta, it's like not utilizing the full breadth of the full res that you should be able to get out of a 4K. It's like very, very old school. I think it's like a 4x3 type of a thing. So what we're going to be doing as we go into, it's called, you have your alpha, you have a beta, and then you have your gold. So gold is like the shipped master version of the game. Mm-hmm. So for gold, we are going to be, actually looking at expanding to a proper, I think it's 16x9 is the ratio, with a, higher resolution, et cetera. So, all that will be happening in gold, but if you're playing the beta, you won't see those changes in just yet.
You should make it a joke where like the intro, the tutorial of the game is in 4:3, and then like something happens where it's like, wait, this is an HD? Oh shit, move the screens, and like have people like push the black bars on the screen out of the way.
It turns out it's like fully it's like just like a VR game at the end of the day.
It's like, we could fit more on the screen, bring it in.
Is that the Luminous engine? What's going on?
Oh man, so you're still looking at early 2018 then? Is that going to be happening, or do you think it might get pushed a bit?
No, that hasn't changed.
Trying to push you for a release window here.
Yeah, no, so Q1 2018 is still a release window. It'll probably be the tail end of that release window, so it'll probably be like the end of Q1. But yeah, no, we haven't changed on anything around what we would be delivering. We're still looking at that kind of late Q1 release window. So nothing there has changed. In fact, we are actually really excited because with beta, we've completed a sizable chunk of the game.
Nice. How big is it looking to be, like, hour-wise?
I think it's kind of one of those things. If you play through if it's just the main story, I think it'll probably be somewhere in the 20 to 30 hour range, but there are going to be a ton, like I said, of side quests. You're going to have New Game Plus. There's going to be like a card game with kind of increasingly difficult opponents to play and more kind of rare cards to find, and various like trophies to unlock, etc. So there's a lot there. So it's kind of misleading to say that it's a 20 or 30 hour game, because if you're any kind of like an RPG gamer or a completionist, you will spend way more than that trying to complete the game.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm excited for it, man. It's been way, way, way too long that we've been talking about this game on the show. I want it to fucking come out already.
well, hopefully when it comes out, I'll, you guys can be the hopefully the first ones I would love to share the news with.
That'd be cool. As soon as you have a release date, just tell me. We'll talk about it on the show. I'll get you back on. I don't give a fuck. We'll get you.
We can play the game live, too. We'll do the whole thing. Cool. Fucking do it live.
Do it live. Oh, shit. Are you going to have any kind of voice acting? Because I haven't been emailed about lending my voice to the game yet.
No voice acting. You know what it was? Already, like, first of all, voice acting is, as a sound guy, voice acting already is kind of a nightmare for me. In that a game of this scale, there's like, there would be way too much, like, think of Fire Emblem or something like that, or like the, you know, the Chrono Trigger that was released for PlayStation. Like, there's just like way too much there, and it's just like overwhelming as it is. But then just like the added work of like actually organizing everything, getting all the actors, like figuring all that out. I'm like, I barely have time to just get the game done and to write music that I hope people will enjoy.
Just send me the full script. I'll do every voice. Me and Flick will do it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, I haven't talked to him in ages.
Come on, man. You have friends who will do voice acting for you. I don't want anything for it. I just want to hear myself in a game. I'll be the sausage vendor.
You are the sausage vendor.
Yeah, but now I could be the sausage vendor.
Hey, all right, you want some sausage?
No.
Are you buying? Are you selling?
What are you buying?
That's what it is. What are you buying? Oh, man. If anybody dresses up as Joakim and comes to our booth, you're just going to win something like
a
poster.
Oh, my God. There you go. Cosplay as the sausage vendor. So you have to be fat, bald, and have a beard, and you win.
I'm totally backing that, by the way. I'm 100% serious. If anybody comes dressed as the sausage vendor from Pixel Noir, I will totally find something to give to you that's awesome.
Where are you going to be showing off the game? Where are you guys heading in the coming months?
So the last con we did was in D.C. We did the Sam Arcade at the Smithsonian. And then, yeah, it was a really cool experience. And so the next one we're doing is going to be MAGFest. We were invited to a couple of others, but we decided in the interest of actually getting the game done and putting distractions aside.
In the interest of getting shit done.
let's just stop here while we're ahead and just get the game done. So we kind of put a little moratorium on events for a little bit. And so the next big event, we just got the acceptance email the other day, will be at MAGFest. We've been accepted into MIVS, which huge shout out to them, because I think this is going to be like year 4 in a row.
I was going to say, weren't they aiming to like get different people there every year? And you guys are just, the game's going to be out and you'll still be showing it off there.
I don't understand how we've been kind of like graced by the gods, because I told Len, co-founder of this company, but I told him, like, I'm like, don't expect anything. Like, we're not getting in a fourth time in a row. There's no friggin' way. And he's like, no, I think we got a shot. Like, just wait for it. I think we might have a shot at this. And I'm like, I'm just gonna like assume we're not doing it and move on with my life. And they accepted us, and my jaw literally dropped, because, I've been doing various like music acts there, like the One Ups. I did Smash Brothers for a few years there, just like a bunch of different things there. And it is impossible to be there for subsequent years in a row like that. So like huge, huge shout out and thanks to them. Cause I think,
I'm that's thinking amazing. You just might be tradition now, like how Robert Aldrich is still a guest every year.
Yeah. That's right.
He's the only one who's not only been to every MAGFest, but he's been a guest at every MAGFest. So I think you guys are just going to be the Robert Aldrich of MIVS.
Or like John St. John. Like, he's just there every year for some reason now.
Has he been there recently? I don't remember if he's been there or not.
Yeah, I think he's been. I'm pretty sure.
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. Anyway.
You could get him to do a voice in the game.
Oh man, he would crush it. I could get him to do Joe.
Oh God, you dick. Who voices the sausage vendor? Oh, it's our friend. He's been a longtime friend of ours, big supporter of the game. Is it that Joe guy that he's named after? Oh no, it's John St. John. And I'm just standing there like, you motherfuckers.
I'm all out of bubblegum. But and sausages.
But if you did that, you would have to have like a Duke Nukem cameo, and I would voice that.
Yeah, right. I would have a Duke
Buy
Nukem there.
Buy some sausage,
you would voice that.
Pussies.
Oh, man. It's going to be a good game, guys. It's going to be a great game.
It better be. We've been hyping this up on the show for years. So if the game turns out shitty, like I'm going to look worse than we already do.
No, it's on you. You know that. Like if the game is crap, that's totally on you. It's,
probably. I'll take responsibility. It's all good.
You know what? It's in a really cool place now. We just finished talking to the Hartforth Alicia guys, Alonzo Martin over there, and then the Shovel Knight gang, and we are finalizing implementation of Shovel Knight within the game too as a cameo. So, we've worked at this point, I think, with almost all the backers. I think we've got like six or seven left on all of the kind of backer specific content that are going to be generated there. It all fits within the lore of the game, like. We all made sure that the ideas kind of work within the framework of the game. So it's I'm really excited. I can't wait to show this off.
Me too, man. Like it's been a long time coming. So it is about time.
Thanks, man.
Oh, I still feel bad. I couldn't be a higher tier donor than I was the first time around when you guys had like a briefcase you were giving away filled with a bunch of shit.
We were giving away like houses, like cars. It was, it's point of advice is for sure to like, make any kind of physical products like very, very high tier. That was something that we learned for the second time around. Because it's untenable to have all of that cost. And like, you know, at the end of the day, we're essentially a software development company. We're not in the business of like making merch. That's not what we do for day in and day out. So, for sure. Like making those kinds of tiers a little bit higher tier. It was sad because, I know like so many of my friends would have loved to get that stuff, but at the same time, like it was just not manageable for us. So
I just expect you to give me all your prototypes the way it is. So.
I'll come over with the briefcase next time, all right?
Sounds good. But is there anything else you want to talk about with the game before we jump on to the news of the week? Because I'm dragging you with me to do the news. You're my guest co-host this week.
Let's do it. Let's jump. Let's
Sounds
go for
good.
It. I'm ready.
Let's talk some news. I think the big news of the week, clearly, the Xbox One X came out this week. I picked mine up. It looks insane. Like when I played Forza 7 in 4K HDR, like I thought my eyes were going to melt. It looked so fucking good.
Oh man. I switched. So I had last generation for the 360. I had an Xbox, but then I recently switched, as you know, to PS4.
You
so
motherfucker.
But you know what? I'm kind of like, I'm enjoying the PlayStation 4, but I do have moments of like, I kind of wish I had an Xbox because, a lot of the integration with like TV and just, there's a lot of cool features that they're coming out with. So I am totally jealous right now.
Well, shit. Black Friday, they're going to have the S for like $190 at places.
Oh, dang.
So jump on that. And then we could play stuff online together.
Oh, like when we played, Colonial Marines.
Oh my God, I forgot about it. I tried to block that from my memory.
It just ended up with like basically Joe saving my butt a billion times. And then us laughing.
Sadness.
A lot of sadness.
I can't believe this thing exists.
They're saying it's like, it's even like faster, like connection speeds and stuff. Have you noticed any of that?
With the X, I don't know. Like, when we first got the system was like the day that Comcast was having their nationwide fuck up. So my speeds would go from like 150 meg a second down to like 400 K a second. So it's been up and down. Sadly, there have been a handful of reports out there of systems either going to black screens or having errors. Because of my luck in the world, I have one of the bad ones.
Oh, you poor, poor guy.
Oh, I know. I know.
Man.
It looked great for the first 2 days I had it. And then I was trying to reload all my Rock Band DLC because, you know, it has to repopulate all your content. And the system just froze. And then I did a reboot and it was giving me system errors. And from the GameStop I was at, the guy said that they had two problem consoles and I was one of them. So,
oh God, of course. What are the odds?
Dude, I'm just saying, you know, it's a launch console. Technology has issues at launch. It's just the way of the world. As long as I don't get another three in a row like I did with the PS4, I'll be okay.
I'm always curious because I know with the, when you had the PS4 issue, like Sony didn't do anything, right? Like they didn't give you credit towards a new one or partial refund or anything like that, right?
Well, it depends which one you're asking about. Because, you know, the first one went bad in like the first month or so because it had that blue light of death, which was a launch issue. You know, again, shit's going to happen. That's how technology is at launch. You're going to get some bad ones coming out. It's just the way of the world. So we did a replacement. They sent one back. And when that happened, we decided, you know, if we're going to have issues, we might as well pay for like the extended, I think it was 2 or 3 year warranty we paid Sony for. And then that one that we got was like dead within 2 days. And it was like three in the span of a month I went through. And then when I was on my fifth, that was the one that started smoking when we lived in Danville. I think I was telling you about that a while back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that one was, I want to say like a year and a few months after launch. It was sometime like a year and then the following summer. So it was maybe a year and a half or so. And we had the issue where it started smoking. I contacted Sony because, you know, we paid for a 3 year warranty. They refused to cover it because they said that warranty only covered the one console.
That's crazy. I remember.
Which was the one that we had for like 2 days.
So now is Microsoft treating you any better with the Xbox One X?
Well, I talked with Microsoft there. You know, I had two options. One was that I send the console in, they either try to repair it or send a replacement, or they do an advanced replacement where they put like a $500 hold on your credit card and they send you a console and then you have to send yours to them. That way, you know, it's less time without a system.
Yeah.
We don't really have the funds because we just dropped $500 on a console to put another $500 hold on a console.
Yeah.
So I was talking the manager up at GameStop I'm pretty friendly with, and he said he's going to try calling around to other stores in the district to see if there's any Scorpio editions around that he could just have sent to his store to do a swap.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Okay.
Thankfully, we didn't get rid of our old system yet. Like, we listed it on Craigslist, and I haven't had any hits yet. So I just hooked that one up.
Jeez.
Man. Dude, that's the way my year has been going. It's everything. Everything is going wrong.
I just don't even have words for, like, how ridiculous your platform stories are, your console stories are. It's crazy.
Do you want to hear how, like, even more fucked up? Our TV broke because it started developing, like, a line of dead pixels across the bottom of it. And then any kind of dark screen would get incredibly pixelated. Thankfully, we paid for, like, a 5 year warranty on that thing, and they sent us a new one. So that's why I have a 4K TV now. Free, yeah.
Nice.
Our washer broke, so we had to get a new washer. Ashley, when she was driving home from work, a truck kicked up a rock and cracked the windshield. When the glass company came and put a new windshield in, they cracked the replacement. So we had to wait a couple of days for them to come back and replace it again. And then a few days later, there was a chip in the windshield from another rock from her driving home.
Oh my God.
Our PSVR broke like a week out of warranty. And again, Sony's like, oh, it's out of warranty. We can't really do anything. So,
Jesus.
Dude, fucking everything is breaking all at once. It's insane.
That's insane. Oh man. I have no words. I am so sorry.
I don't fucking know, man.
hopefully the One X kind of just, hopefully when you get the new one, it just kind of stays in. It's just a solid piece of, you know what? I'm actually switching. So I'm not switching gaming consoles, but I am finally switching from the iPhone because I'm done with it.
Really? Apple.
Yeah.
Why? Yeah,
so cause I just don't feel like they're innovating anymore. So,
I don't know. I did my Windows phone, and when Verizon pretty much gave up on them, I went back to iPhone because I will never touch an Android again. Fuck Android in every way.
Well, I'm going with the Google phone, Google Pixel 2. I figure that's probably the best bet since I have almost everything up on Google Drive anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm really excited for it. I have nothing like facial recognition and facial emojis don't do it for me. I don't see any.
You don't want to send like video emoji to people of you talking as a chicken?
I mean, I feel like I can communicate adequately without it, but you know, I was also one of the guys who said, who needs a phone on a camera on a smartphone? And then like years later, everybody was doing it. True. Including me, so
true.
I don't know. Who am I to talk?
I don't know. I'm happy with my iPhone. That's the one thing that hasn't broken on me yet.
All right, I'll let you know if I have a similar story in a few months.
Sounds good. But on the whole Xbox One X thing, GameSpot is reporting that GameStop has sold through most of their inventory, like nationwide Xbox One X supply, in a single day. They pretty much completely sold out.
Wow.
Yeah. So hopefully this is the start of a turnaround for Microsoft and for the Xbox platform. Now they just need to focus on like new IP and first party games because that shit's important too.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I feel like Switch is killing it.
Oh, they are wrecking things. I love my Switch too. Do you have one?
No, it's on my very long list of things to get. I don't have one yet, but Mario Odyssey looks so freaking amazing, and Breath of the Wild too. So, oh,
so good. See, if you would have came up to visit, you could have played them both.
Well, that all was contingent on my back not breaking.
My back hurts. Says the guy whose back hurts all the time.
Yeah, I was like, you're not one to talk, my friend.
Did you visit me when I was in the hospital after my surgery? I can't remember.
Yep. I was there.
When I did the show in the hospital.
Oh, that surgery. No, I wasn't there. I don't think I was there for that.
Because that was when we were still in Dan. Oh, you were up when I had the kidney, like,
yeah.
No, the liver, when they slashed my liver when they had my gallbladder out.
Yep. I was there.
You've been there for me in some rough times, man. I appreciate it.
I'm there, man.
Good
there
stuff. For you. I mentioned how amazing Forza 7 looked on the X. They announced that Forza Horizon 3 is getting an Xbox One X patch January 15th. I think this is the only time in history that they announced a release date for a game patch.
Huh.
But I love Horizon 3, so I'm excited as fuck for that.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, going back to Forza looks unreal at this point.
It really does. Oh man, you don't even know. Like you need to see it in 4K HDR. It is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, well, hopefully when I come over, I'll be able to actually see it in action. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Say no more.
Hopefully. Door's always open for you, man. Just, you know, do your 3-hour drive, hang out for 20 minutes, and then leave.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I don't have to keep doing that anymore. I think I'm past those days. I used to like show up, like hang out for like an hour or two, and then like drive back. But I'm pretty sure That was always a stupid thing to do. So
yeah, yeah, we made fun of you quite a bit for that too. And you just
oh, I know.
You just smiling like, oh, guys.
I don't think I still haven't lived any of it down. So yeah, maybe when I come up next time, it won't be for 2 hours.
I guess we'll see. Let's see, some other news. The video game voice actor strike is officially over. I know there was talk a few weeks ago of like an agreement that everyone was coming to, but I guess it is all signed and the strike is over. So now you can hire people for Pixel Noir.
Woo woo. Well, actually we'll start hiring for the expansion packs that will hopefully come as sales skyrocket and possibly, you know, possibly is a news story on your next show.
I know how you could do voice acting in the game. You can hire like a dozen different voice actors and everybody only voices the sausage vendor. But but to unlock them, you have to buy loot boxes and each box will give you a different voice actor.
Oh, man.
But again, only for the sausage vendor.
Only for the sausage. It's like sausage vendor microtransactions.
Yeah.
And
they're loot boxes too. So
it actually reminds me of it's like a gamified microtransaction version of the Bad Dudes album Tie Guy, where like everybody just remixed the Sagat track. So we had like I think 9 or 10 different remixes of the same Sagat theme.
It's
just
something
because.
Crazy like that. Oh my god! I wonder if I have it. Let's see how many songs there are.
I'm pretty sure it was a pretty solid album. It wasn't just like 2 or 3 songs. There was like 10. A bunch. 10?
10 of them. The One-Ups, Joshua Morse, Tim Sheehy, Mustin, Dale, Kunal, Maze Dude, Zyko, Maze Dude again, and then Dishu.
Yep. That's
God
right.
Damn. I think I'll be playing some Tie Guy at the end of this episode.
Yeah, buddy.
Since you brought it up, that seems like a good opportunity to play it.
So, guys, just as you're listening to it, just think Chocam, microtransaction, loot box.
Yeah, voice actors, all
voice actors.
Sausage vendor. Yeah, you pay like $5 a box and you unlock Troy Baker as the sausage guy, Nolan North.
Oh, man.
John St. John. And then me. I'll be one.
You could be one.
I'll be
for
the,
sure.
I'll be the common prize. So everybody ends up stuck with me first. That'd be a good way to do it. Oh, shit. You still there? Do I keep losing you? What the hell's going on?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Like, what's going on?
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I don't know. Can you hear me now, though?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Quit breaking things.
You know, I don't know. See, this is why I'm switching to the Google Pixel 2. I'm not going to have any of these problems.
You know what would probably also help if you did this on a PC instead of your phone?
Yeah, but then I can't pace. I got to pace when I talk.
Get yourself a fidget spinner.
I actually do have one.
Do you?
It doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't. I end up like walking in circles around the fidget spinner.
Oh, God. That doesn't surprise me. Oh, shit. Let's see. What other news this week? In an insane week, Perfect World Entertainment has been shutting companies the fuck down. First came the news that Motiga, the developers of Gigantic, and they were early guests on the show, they were gutted down to only a small handful of people who are basically just hanging around to run maintenance on Gigantic, although Perfect World is claiming more content will be coming. Perfect World also shut down Runic Games Seattle, the creators of the Torchlight series, and Hob. More bullshit about the company's continued strategy to focus on online games as a service, which I'm getting sick of this whole games as a service shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Games don't need to have more content on a weekly basis. Just release a good game, people will buy it, and cut the bullshit. Yeah.
I think more people are feeling that too. Like, I think people just want a solid, like, it's about the gameplay, not about the amount of content that you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly about, like, is your game fun to play? Because an endless runner can sometimes be way more fun and more just interesting than, you know, content drops that just are just there to because somebody's got a deadline to meet.
I agree.
So I don't know. We're in that bucket of like, for sure, of like, if you're going to charge premium prices, just do a premium game. Don't
that's
worry
why
about
you need
like
loot boxes and microtransactions in Pixel Noir.
That's why we're going to do Joe Cam, Sausage Guy voiceover microtransactions. Wow. I can't even talk microtransactions.
Oh man, that's not the only bad news of the week though, as Telltale Games has laid off a whopping 25% of their staff as part of a company restructure. The layoffs affect 90 employees, and the CEO says the goal of the restructure is to produce, quote, fewer, better games with a smaller team. Yeah, I'm kind of worried about that, but maybe this means they won't be shitting out new games every other month and they'll focus on making better experiences.
Oh man, that's that's not necessarily a bad thing, actually, as I'm thinking about it. I mean, it's a bad thing from the workforce, which if you're a writer for Telltale Games and you need a job, definitely talk to us. That's not necessarily a bad thing either, because then they can be hopefully more focused and stop doing all these kind of one-off, just franchise type games just to sell an extra buck for that franchise.
No. And then in the news of company shutdowns, EA has acquired a company that they'll probably shut down in a couple of years. They are in the process of acquiring Respawn Entertainment, the creators of Titanfall. So they were partnered with them to release the game, and now they are officially acquiring them. And we all know that EA loves to acquire companies and then pillage them and shut them down.
In shame.
Which is always fun. They are apparently doing this for $315 million in cash, as well as a possible bonus of another $140 million. And Respawn is currently working on a new game in the Titanfall franchise. I think some kind of mobile thing they've been talking about. A Star Wars game and some kind of VR experience. I worry for the future of that company.
Yeah, that company. I mean, once EA gets in the mix, it's so hot. But I don't know. Titanfall 2 got mixed reviews, right?
It got fantastic reviews. It just didn't sell that well because it released so close to everything else.
Is that the reason? Because I heard like it got just like, you know, some, you know, people liked it and it was a good game, like very well made, but just for some reason it fell flat, and so maybe that's the reason why. But
they released it a week away from Battlefield.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that's right. Yep, rookie mistake.
Because a shooter going against a shooter from the same company is clearly a smart decision.
Oh, man, EA.
Oh, well, what are you going to do? At least they have EA access on the Xbox One, which is fucking awesome.
Is EA still voted, like, the worst company in the world?
I think every other year or something they get voted worst company. I still think Activision's worse with some of the shit that they do. And lately, I think Sony's even worse than anyone else with how anti-consumer they've been. But that's,
for like, what do you mean for the anti-consumer?
Like just their exclusivity contracts, buying up exclusives, buying up games to keep off other platforms. Their complete lack of any interest in trying to get cross-platform play. Like if PC, Microsoft, and Nintendo are all on board, why does Sony have to be the bitch in this scenario?
Yeah, you know what's really interesting too, because we had to sign basically developer contracts with Sony and Xbox, and they both have clauses in their contracts that state if you like, I think it was Xbox specifically that said, you must launch Xbox at the same time as Sony if you want any kind of level of coverage, you know, from Microsoft for the game. There was some weird clause like that where I was just totally blown away. And Sony had something similar too, where they they want you to go head to head like that. So I totally get that. I mean, that is, they've been fighting that battle for years.
No. And now years later, it seems Microsoft has been easing up on a lot of that stuff. And Sony is just getting even worse with it. But I don't know, whatever. What are you going to do?
Time will tell.
Last bit of news I have is that the very first entertainment app for the Switch is finally here. And it's not Netflix, surprisingly. It's Hulu.
Huh.
Yeah. So if you're a Switch owner and you're a Hulu subscriber, watch it on your 5-inch screen.
Handmaid's Tale. Go for it.
I would know. I'm not a Hulu subscriber. We have Netflix.
I actually just recently switched to Hulu. And, you know, good points and bad points, just like Netflix. But I got to say, Handmaid's Tale was amazing.
I hate the fact that Hulu has an ad-free option and some shows still have ads.
Yeah.
Like, I'm paying you for no ads. Don't give me fucking ads. Don't even give me ads for other shows on your service.
I'll tell you what, Netflix is definitely, like, overall, it's slicker, for sure. It's undeniable. And their compression technology is, I think, miles ahead of pretty much any other competitor on the market, except possibly YouTube.
My only issue with Netflix is how much content they've been losing.
Yeah.
Because they're focusing more on their original stuff than retaining, like, they lost Futurama. They are losing It's Always Sunny next month. It's just too much good stuff has been going away.
Yeah, they lost Doctor Who a while. I mean, it's just like, you really have to watch the stuff, like, when it comes on. You can't trust that it'll be there in a month or 2 months or whatever.
No, which is a bummer, but... Now everybody wants to have their own streaming service too. CBS started their own. I know Disney's looking into doing their own, or they're going to be doing their own next year. Like, how many services do they expect people to want to purchase?
Yeah, I don't know. All I can tell you is that there's not enough digital cable providers. Like, I know YouTube just released their YouTube TV. Hulu just started messing around with Hulu TV type stuff. Sling's out there. I've been kind of testing out some of these, you know, different ones, but there's for sure not enough competition. And it's like, I actually hope that there's a lot more, because I think that the technology can get way better and way more just user friendly.
My only concern with, like, streaming television is, you know, it's all done internet wise, and if there's any kind of internet restrictions or data caps that you have to worry about, and now all the talk of, like, net neutrality going away, so they might filter some services over the other and throttle this and throttle that, which Ajit Pai at the FCC could go fuck himself in every way.
Him and his big Dunkin' Donuts mug.
Oh god, seriously, fuck that guy so hard. Every time I see his face, I just want to shit on it. I hate that guy so much. He is doing everything he can to destroy the internet, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, he'll also be an NPC in Pixel Noir. You can have a microtransaction loot crates for his voiceover as well.
Nice. I want to be one of those voices.
Hi, I'm the head of the FCC. Shit on my face.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And then you get the Ajit Pai face shitting DLC.
Only on Pixel Noir.
Rated E for everyone.
Rated E for everyone.
But yeah, that's all the news I got for this week. Anything recent you want to talk about?
Nothing recent, but I will just mention how freaking psyched I am to one day try the Star Wars worlds that they're building in Disney World.
Yeah, that should be cool.
That thing sounds amazing. Like, they will keep track of, like, I think you pick, from what I understand, you go there, you pick whether you're a rebel or just basically you pick your side, and then you go, and as you go through each exhibit or each ride or whatever, it keeps track of which side you picked. And it customizes the experience based on your preferences that you that you set when you got your magic band, and the preferences, and then what side you pick. So it like really custom caters like your age group, like how old you are, like what side you pick, and all that, all of your preferences. It even keeps track of like your eating preferences, so it tells you like which place to go to. Like it's going to be freaking futuristic.
That sounds all nuts. Hell.
Yeah, I'm super excited for it.
Now I just have to go to Disney.
You've never been to Disney?
The last time I was at Disneyland, I think I was still in like middle school, and then I've never been to Florida.
Well, I can't say that's entirely a bad thing. Sorry to all of our friends in Florida.
Fuck them. They don't listen to my show, whatever.
Joe's words do not reflect any of the character or thoughts of people in Sword Tech Games. So
in Pixel Noir.
Pixel Noir.
Oh, no,
but
man.
Also huge shout out to the new Call of Duty game. Our good friend Will Roger he was the composer for that game. He's going to actually be doing a track for the Pixel Noir Arrange album.
Oh, nice.
So if you guys haven't played the game, at least check out the soundtrack on YouTube or something like that, or Spotify. It is ridiculous. It's phenomenal. He's done an amazing job. It actually kind of reminds me of like Jason Graves, like a little bit, the Dead Space soundtrack. And then also in other news, I guess I'll just throw this one out too. Big Giant Circles, Jimmy Hinson, just had a track on Stranger Things 2. He's also a contributor to the Pixel Noir Arrange album. So we're really excited to see what he comes up with. But like, huge congrats to both of them for big, big milestones.
Yeah, I saw him posting on Facebook that he was in Stranger Things. And I was like, wow, that's pretty awesome.
It's awesome, awesome get, and like well-deserved. And his, honestly, his music and his style of music fits in perfectly with that show.
Yeah.
So.
But it's funny that you mentioned Call of Duty, because that's going to be the first review that we're talking about tonight as soon as I let you go. No surprise to anyone listening to the show, but all the reviews were recorded earlier tonight. So I'm just going to like edit shit together and not hide any of it at all, because I don't care anymore.
You know what? I'm going to skip that part, because I'm literally going to get that game just so I could experience the soundtrack. And I hope it's positive, but I guess time will tell.
Indeed.
Just gonna roll the dice on that one.
Oh man. Well, Kunal, thank you so much for joining. It has been way too long since you were on. Come back on sooner than like 9 months from now.
Sounds good, man. And hopefully we get to hang out in person, and I'm just gonna start listing off games like Forza. I wanna play the new Forza. The new I don't have a Switch, so I need to catch up on Switch. So I'm gonna just like make like a whole big task list, and then we're just gonna hang out for a weekend, if that's cool.
Sounds good. Ashley is going to be gone all weekend at work, so if you're bored this weekend, keep me company.
Sounds good, man.
All right, have yourself a good one, Kunal.
You too, man. Take care, Joe.
Well, thanks again to Kunal for joining. Always fun having him on. Hopefully I'll get to see him in person soon. I miss seeing him, but lots more to do today. A lot of reviews to take care of. And Cole Martin, you're here to join. And
I am here.
Talk about shit, aren't you?
I have things to say. I have opinions. I played games and I have opinions.
Whoa there.
I know.
There's no room for opinions on this show.
Shit.
But there are some good stuff to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
Like some surprisingly Indeed. Good stuff. The first game we're going to talk about today on the piddly little SML podcast is a niche little indie called Call of Duty World War II. What the fuck?
Where did this game come from? I've never heard of this.
Seriously, it's just like came out of nowhere, and it seems to be getting a small little following. So let's talk about it on the show. Developed by Sledgehammer Games, published by Activision, released November 3rd on Xbox One, Steam, and PS4 for $59.99. Call of Duty returns to its roots with Call of Duty World War II, a breathtaking experience that redefines World War II for a new generation of gaming. Land in Normandy on D-Day and battle across Europe through iconic locations in history's most monumental war. Experience classic Call of Duty combat, the bonds of camaraderie, and the unforgiving nature of war against a global power throwing the world into tyranny. Cole, what did you think of Call of Duty World War II?
Thank God there are no jump packs or exosuits or power slides. Or there are boots and they are on the ground. And it is funny because when you play this game, you can tell people that have played the futuristic Call of Duties because they still keep trying to jump. And then you shoot them and you go, no, bitch, sit down.
That I think that's the highest praise I've been hearing from everyone is like, this is what Call of Duty should be. There's no futuristic super jumps and crazy technology. It's just... Mm-hmm. This is Call of Duty. So, this is what the series was.
I played Call of Duty very heavily from Modern Warfare 2 when I first picked it up all the way up to Black Ops 3. I have had every one of them on launch. I have made my husband stand out in the snow and the cold for midnight launches at GameStop to pick up my pre-orders because I'm a horrible wife. And then Infinite Warfare came around and I just said, no, I don't want to play this. I want a classic Call of Duty experience. So I'm incredibly grateful for World War II. I'm incredibly grateful to see them go back, scale it all down and just strip away all the excess. There's fun to be had in the jumping around nonsense, but there's just something about the emotional experience of playing a game like this. And the campaign, I'm not even going to lie, it left me teary-eyed. I didn't straight up cry. I didn't straight up cry. And I have in the past over Call of Duty games found myself with tears. I got really close because the ending of this is just super emotional. And I think that's what Call of Duty needed. The last Call of Duty campaign that I was actively, like, I completed was Black Ops 3, and then before that it was Ghost, and I was so mad at the ending of Ghost. I was like, I don't even want to play future Call of Duty campaigns. I will buy them for the multiplayer, but that ending was horrible. And thank you, World War II, for making up for that.
Well, clearly you don't want to go into the ending of this, even
no,
though
I do not.
We kind of know just, what happened even, at the end of World War II.
Right. It's a little funny because you do know where it's going to end. And the campaign for World War II, it takes you through, you start on the beaches of Normandy for D-Day in 1944, and it takes you all the way through to the Battle of the Bulge. You will go through the liberation of Paris before that. So, I mean, we know how the war ends, but we don't know the specific characters and these soldiers in this platoon. We don't know their specific story. And so the game focuses the campaign very heavily on Daniels and Pearson and that platoon and the camaraderie between them and also the strife that builds up between them. Not everything is brotherhood and roses and lovely between this group of guys. So not only do they have their own struggles and fights with, you know, the war itself, and the perilous situations that they're constantly going to be in because of the nature of war, but also because they feel they can't trust each other, or they may feel like, you know, their commander is putting them in a dangerous situation, or they don't want to follow the orders that they've been given. And then, of course, that turns around to, you know, the commander feeling like he's being betrayed by his squad. So there's that internal strife going on, and it focuses very heavily on that and their history and their future as the story progresses. The story is told through mostly through the eyes of Daniels, and there's narration between the chapters, like he's sending this story home in letters, most frequently to his girlfriend, Hazel, but also to his brother, Paul. Daniel's main motivation for even joining the army was to make his brother proud. And so you see that come out a lot in the choices that he's forced to make, and the decisions and actions that come along are paralleled between, you know, what happens during the war and his relationship with his brother and what has happened with them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very very impressive in-depth story here where that just not only just focuses on the war at hand, but also the personal and interconnected relationships of the people involved.
I know I'm personally excited to check out more of the campaign before the game was sent on to you for review, since you're the big Call of Duty fan. Clearly, you're the only one I felt was qualified to cover this game. But I had a night with it for myself, and I played through that first D-Day mission, and holy shit, that was pretty intense.
It was intense, and that intensity, it carries through throughout the campaign. There were never any moments where I felt like I was in a lull in the story that I just couldn't, like, where you sometimes with longer campaigns like this, and especially when it's linear and you know where you're going to go and you know what you need to do, you can just be like, well, okay, next scene, next mission. And you just kind of get, it becomes monotonous. And I didn't really feel like that was the case. There was enough shake up in the story, especially as you get further on. And you, even though you're primarily playing as Daniels, there are times where Daniels will shift command to, Perez, who runs the tanks. Or you will take over as a fighter pilot who is, has to engage in some dogfights before he can get to, Daniel's squad in order to protect them and offer cover for their flank or what have you. So it's not just limited to the main cast that you're going to be interacting with. You find out stories and experiences from side players as well.
Nice.
And so that kind of intensity, like I said, from the beginning, it's just there the whole time.
So it's got a solid campaign. What about the rest of the game? What else is there?
There's also the classic Nazi zombies. Nazi zombies first became a thing in World at War, and it has gone through a lot of changes and iterations all the way up to where we are now in World War II. We have seen alien modes instead of zombies, but zombies kind of took back over and was like, no, aliens aren't going to work for us. Nazi zombies, they continued the trend of leaving you more to do. It used to just be, you know, if you wanted to, you could just run around and murder zombies and do nothing else. And that was fine. And then as Nazi zombies grew, it kind of got a mind of its own. And it's almost like its own second game tucked away inside every Call of Duty now. And it has, at this point now, it has its own story. It has its own, you know, missions that you have to go through. You can happily just run around and shoot zombies and not worry about doing all of the extra stuff, but you're not going to make it as far. This is actually one of my kind of complaints. I liked it better when it was an Easter egg. If you wanted to find this stuff and carry it out, you could, but you could also just play.
Yeah.
And progress and make it, you know, if you just wanted to see if you can make it to level 174, just make it to level 174 and you don't have to do it. But they have added in now there's, you know, you level up your characters and they have special abilities instead of just being, oh, here's a random and everybody's the same. You choose, you know, like a class system and you level up and there's consumables and it just kind of, it's a lot. When you just want to go mindlessly shoot zombies, it can be a little overbearing. And there's a lot of people that enjoy it, but for me, sometimes I just want to shoot zombies. I don't want to go open special doors and mines and put together secret weapons. And that said, I do have a friend who is very good at that part of the game. And he was very grateful. It's his favorite thing to do. So he was like, oh, yeah, we're going to play some zombies. And we did. And we got to, like, 19 on the first try, which was bullshit because there's no achievement for making it to 20. But, you know, it was – he's – he. If you have a friend that is really good with that aspect of like opening the doors in the proper order and finding the power-ups and you just want to shoot mindlessly, that probably works out a lot better than if you were just going to try to take this on with some randoms. But you can take it on with randoms if you want to. And there's a whole community of people who really only focus on the zombie aspect of the game. And so they're probably very, very thrilled. And this is just me being quirky. But it was still fun. Like I said, when I didn't have to worry about carrying out the rituals and stuff and had somebody else to do it for me, it was much better than the zombie mode in Black Ops 3, because Black Ops 3 forced everybody to participate in that stuff if you wanted to progress, and I was just like, yeah, this sucks. So this was a much better iteration of zombies, if I had to say so.
Nice. And what about the standard multiplayer?
The standard multiplayer. This is everybody's bread and butter, because this is what keeps the game running for the year after you've beat the campaign. And thank goodness it's boots on the ground. But they've done a few changes to it. They've added in a headquarters mode. So basically you have like this little gathering area for before you go into multiplayer lobbies. And from here, you can access the quartermaster and use your in-game currency to buy, contracts. So if you want to challenge yourself with, you know, getting so many kills in a certain amount of time in a certain game mode or whatever, you can use your currency to buy contracts and do that. There's also daily challenges if you're up for those. Same kind of idea as the contracts. I'm not sure why there's a difference between the two, because they both kind of give you the same loot. But you can either, you know, you can have daily challenges, weekly challenges, or you can buy your contracts which have a specific time limit that's smaller, like a 10 or 30, you know, 30 minute window. Once you get your group together in the headquarters, then you can jump into a lobby. The headquarters is nice for trying out different weapons and stuff before going into multiplayer. It does have that benefit because there is a firing range. There's actually a lot to do in the headquarters alone. There's a score streak tryout where, you know, there's an area where there's a battle going on below you, and you can try out your score streaks to see which ones you want to equip or learn how to use the ones that are there better. There's also the firing range, and then there is a 1v1 mode. Anybody that is in the headquarters with you, you can challenge to 1v1. And it's just a little fun mini mode, if you will, that it puts the two of you into a pit, and you can you vote to eliminate. It'll give you a list of three weapons, and each of you will eliminate the one that you don't want to use, and then whatever's left, both of you will have the same weapon class, and then you have 60 seconds, and whoever kills the other person three times first wins. So nice. It's just a fun little thing if you've got competitive friends, which I do. I'm not, and I was just like, I don't care. I'm but my friends had a really good time with that little mode. And if you've got a large enough group with you in headquarters, that could actually be pretty interesting, because the winner stays. You can set it up to have a queue of everybody that wants to participate. And so it does the first two, and then the winner stays, and they pick somebody else from the queue to take on the winner. And so you just keep rolling through your friends until, you know, you're tired of it. So it's a neat little add-on.
Speaking of your friends, I appreciated when you were telling me, before we started recording, you're like, I was just able to finish the campaign yesterday. Every time I wanted to play the campaign, I had friends saying, oh my God, let's play multiplayer.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was a case of, like, I would start up the Xbox, and I get on, anybody that knows me or is friends with me on Xbox, I get on at 7:30 in the morning every weekday. And normally, I have until around 11 or 12 before people start messaging me and be like, oh, you want to play this or you want to play that? So I tend to have that little, you know, 4 to 5 hour gap where I work on my review games by myself. I didn't have that this week because as soon as I would pop up online, I would get a message. Oh, you want to play some zombies? Oh, you want to play some multiplayer? Oh, I need a crew and I'm one short. Do you want to come help me out here? And I'm like, I am never going to get through this campaign.
which seems to be a positive because it's showing that it looks like people are more invested in the game this year as opposed to last year where things were all futuristic and
it is. People kind of getting burnt out. Thing. I think out of my group of friends, I only know maybe three of them. And I'm talking a group of friends that are... We've been playing Call of Duty for 7 or 8 years, and last year was the first time none of us got it, except for maybe 2 or 3 out of the whole group. And, I mean, we used to be able to snap our fingers and have a squad no matter what day, you know, time of day it was. We text each other and everything, hey, we're on, come play. And Call of Duty Infinite Warfare came to be, and we were just like, oh, okay, well, no, bye. You know? So it's been very nice to just get those messages. Hey, come on. It's time to play. You said you were going to be on. It's Call of Duty time. Let's go. And it's nice to want to return back to that and to be able to enjoy that again. It doesn't mean that multiplayer is perfect. There's a few minor hitches. There's, you know, as is always the case with a game like this, there's going to be things that need to be nerfed and need to be buffed. One of the most pressing things, though, is, and again, this I mentioned before, I have a problem with the whole forcing you into a division type thing.
Yeah.
And they've gone, and instead of very classic Call of Duty, where you could just unlock whatever weapons you wanted, put it together as your loadout, as you wanted to play, and run into the battle, and that be that. Not anymore. Now there are 5 divisions. And you have, there's no perks system anymore. So there's no more like, oh, steady aim and ghost or whatever that hid you from UAVs. Now it's limited to whatever level you have your division at. There are 4 available special abilities per division and they're all different. And, it's not, for the most part, it's not problematic, but there are a couple of things that bugs me. I tend to be the kind of player that runs around with a suppressed assault rifle. And I've always found that to be the best way for me to play. You can't do that in this one. You can't put a suppressor on an assault rifle. You're SOL. If you're not playing as an airborne class, you can't have a suppressor. And if you are playing as the airborne class, you can only put a suppressor on an SMG.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very odd system to do it that way. Like, it's incredibly limiting, and it just doesn't feel natural for me for Call of Duty. I can still play. I'm still going to get, you know, 20 plus kills and go positive or whatever. But I'm just sitting there going, you know, sneaking up on that group of 6 people would have been a lot easier if I'd had a suppressor.
Is it meant to be more realistic, or what's it meant for?
I would be inclined to say yes if it weren't for the fact that the shotgunner class gets incendiary ammo, and it's only the shotguns. Like, the shotguns in every Call of Duty are everybody's bane of existence. They're overpowered every damn time. You run around into a room and pew, you're shot by somebody sitting in a corner with a shotgun, and that's that. Now they've gone and taken those shotguns and they set you on fire.
Oh, Lord.
So it's just like, we were literally saying it's fire and forget, because as long as you shoot in the general direction of literally anything, you're going to set somebody on fire and get the kill. Like, it's the ultimate beginner's weapon.
Well, now I know what weapon to use if I play it.
Yes, if you play, go to, I can't even remember, Mountain is sniping, so that's not it. Shit, it's the last one available. But
I'll figure it out.
Yeah, it says on it, that's the plus, though. It's very explanatory as far as, like, this is what perks you have available to you at this time. And even though they did away with the classic 3 perk system, you can still go in and you get, you unlock, they look like commitment ribbons. And each one gives you some kind of special ability. So if you want rocket launchers, then you can equip that and you can have a launcher as your secondary. Or if you want score streaks to cost less, then so that you can earn your score streaks more often, there's an option for that. There's, if you find that you die a lot and you can't get a score streak, you can set it to where you don't lose your score streak points when you die, but you can only call in your score streaks one time per game.
I guess so people don't abuse it.
Yes, because there used to be the support system is what it was called when they first introduced it. I want to say it was Ghost that did support first. And it used to just be you kept your streaks and you could keep re-earning them over and over, you know, no matter how many times you died. But for this one, they balanced it out by saying, oh, you can only earn it once and it's going to cost more to earn it. So they, you know, it is balanced out. Whereas instead you could take the perk where they cost less. If you think you're going to do a better job of staying alive for a longer period of time, you can take the perk that makes them cost less, but resets if you die, but also allows you, if you set up a care package, to reroll it. So if you get something like a UAV and your team doesn't really need a UAV, there's UAVs flying everywhere, you can reroll it and get something better.
Nice.
Or worse. So, sometimes you have to be careful because you will reroll worse.
So to recap, great campaign. Great Nazi zombies, great multiplayer. Sum it all up, $60. What is your verdict since this review has gone over 20 minutes?
I'm sorry. Buy it, though. Seriously, I am really glad to see that Call of Duty has come back to what it used to be. And it's definitely worth playing.
I was going
to
say, if we spent 20 minutes talking about this and it wasn't a buy it, I was going to be confused.
I mean, I've done crazier things before, but...
True. But we have more games to cover, so let's move on. Next game is called 8-Bit Adventure Anthology Volume 1, developed by Abstraction Games, published by Reverb Publishing. It released October 31st on Xbox One, Steam, and PS4 for $7.99. Now is your chance to play Shadowgate, The Uninvited, and Deja Vu the way they were supposed to be played, with a controller in hand and worlds waiting to be explored, set within the realms of fantasy, horror, and film noir. These three fantastic stories are a must-have for those who enjoy traditional adventure games made of tougher stuff. Cole, what'd you think of these?
So, there are three games included in the 8-Bit Adventure Anthology, but they are basically all the same game reskinned three ways. so, if you figure out one of them, you're not going to struggle with the other two at all. But these are very classic retro games.
I mean, they're all originally NES games.
Yes. So they keep that same screen resolution, but then there's just some art off to the edge of your white screen. And everything is kept nice and neat in this little box. In the top corner of the screen, you actually have your environment, where you can point and click to explore. There will be an item list on the side. At the bottom, for those familiar with Thimbleweed Park, where you had like the options at the bottom, like open and and look at. And okay, so you have those kind of point. Those kind of point and click options again, so that you can interact with the environment. So you'll want to, you know, move your cursor over, say, look, and then move it back up to the box where you have the environment and click, you know, like a candle, and it would look at the candle, give you maybe a description of it, say that it's, you know, the candle is lit or the candle is not lit or something like that. You can interact with everything that way. The main menu of the game, unfortunately, doesn't really give you any information about each of the individual games. They are, I did say it's basically the same game reskinned three ways, but the stories for them are all individual. And as you said, there's, you know, one in horror and one in like a noir setting. And there's none of that is mentioned on the main menu though. It's very dry. Like if you're not familiar with these games already or their history or anything like that. You're just clicking blindly like, well, I don't know which one I want to try. Let's just draw from a hat. So it would be nice if there was like some kind of heads up, like, hey, this game was released in, you know, 1980, whatever, and using this engine, you know, it would be nice if there was some more information there about the games before you start them. And then you're just like, there's no tutorial or anything to tell you how to play it. So you're just kind of lost
when,
if you're not
already. When I was growing up,
these
games didn't need tutorials. You just figured it the fuck out on your own.
You click it out the hard way. But I struggled more with Shadowgate because of that. Like, you're staring at a wall and there's a door and it's locked and there's nothing but concrete and what do you do now? You know? At least when I played the LA Noir game Deja Vu, it was a little easier because it was just a little more intuitive feeling, whereas Shadowgate, I was just like, well, I've got torches, now what? <You know? laughs> Fuck. I don't know how to, what am I just gonna, like, it's a wood door, I can burn it down, but it wouldn't let me burn down the door. Whereas LA Noir was more like,
how do you keep calling it LA Noir?
I do. Shit. Deja Vu, which has the noir-esque. You said it, and now it's in my head. I swear I'm not drunk, but I am tired.
Nice.
Deja Vu had that, you know, private investigator feel to it, and so there was more as far as, like, evidence and stuff to interact with. So it felt easier to figure out where I was supposed to go and what I was supposed to do, just because there was more to interact with. Whereas Shadowgate was just like, well, rip you. And Uninvited was kind of the same way, where I was just like, I don't know what's supposed to go on here. I pushed every button and it just keeps telling me you can't do that.
So lack of hand-holding aside, do the games still play well?
They really do, considering what they are. They play well. They hold up pretty well. I mean, they're not anything that's going to, like, knock your socks off. You know, Shadowgate, you play as the Last of the Line of Kings. With Uninvited, it's more horror genre, and you know, I can't read my note. Wow, what did I write here? I don't know. And Deja Vu, you're the private eye that, you know, is trying to solve a murder mystery that he's being framed for.
Nice.
So they're neat stories. Just, you know, it doesn't hold your hand to get through it, and it is very retro. If you're into retro games, you're probably going to be like, oh, this is amazing. But if you need that little bit of hand holding or a guide to tell you how to click on look at the door, you know, you're going to struggle a little more with it.
I think the thing that surprised me the most about this game was the price tag. For three games, I was legitimately expecting a higher price tag than $7.99. Mm-hmm. So for $8, what's your verdict?
I give it a pretty solid try. The thing is that it's kind of niche, and it's not that kind of retro point and click with very little graphics or whatever. It's not for everybody. I was kind of shocked, though, that Uninvited had a jump scare. And I was like, getting caught off guard for how low quality the graphics are because of its retro nature. I was just like, wait a second. That actually scared me. So yeah, I give it a pretty solid try it.
Nice. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Talomere, developed by Chris McFarlane and Taeon, published by Taeon, released November 9th on the Switch for $6.99. Greetings, hero. How far through Lady Talomere's dungeons can you delve? Each randomly generated room gets bigger, harder, and more rewarding the further you go. Brace yourself as you learn the quirks of each foe, trap, and room type so you can strive for that one more run high score victory. Raise your shield, embrace Lady Talomere's dungeons. This is basically a 2D action platformer-ish roguelike. You start off and you're given a key and you go into a dungeon and then you fight enemies. You clear a room, you get a key, you move on to the next room, you clear it, you get a key, you move on to the next room. Every now and then, rooms will have special events that you could take part in, like One might be a capture the flag style thing where you have to get the flag, go to the little waypoint back to the main room and deliver the flag to the lady. Some of them, like the one room I went to, all of the enemies were doubled, which was fun because they kicked my ass. Story-wise, there's not much here. It's pretty much go in, kill enemies, see how far you can get, go for high score. But that is probably the beauty of the game, is that it's just all about that addictive one more run kind of play. Each time you start over, you know, fresh character, fresh equipment, and you got to see how far you can get. You collect money as you go. Every now and then the rooms will have a hidden shopkeeper that you can unlock, and he'll sell you stuff at a discount. There's the difficulty, I think, is pretty interesting in this game, because there's like, I want to say 10 difficulty levels in the game, and it's all based on how many kittens you kill.
Wow.
Yeah.
Before, I had to stop and think, did I just hear that properly?
Yes. Before you start a run, up top in the main little hub area, there's a guy with a basket of kittens, and you can make the game easier and give yourself more health for every kitten you sacrifice.
Oh,
and there's 9 of them. So you could either go 0 to 9, murdered kittens, each one making the game easier and giving you more health, but each one has its own leaderboard as well.
This is why you have nightmares about your cats. You know that?
I, for the first, you know, couple of runs, I pretty much went with no kittens sacrificed. And then just out of curiosity, I tried doing it with 2 sacrifices, and I went significantly further in the game. So it definitely does make the game easier the more kittens you decide to helplessly murder. The game, that it is incredibly addictive. There's always that feeling of, I want to go one more run. I want to get further. I want to see how much more I can go. It is a terrible, terrible game to bring with you into the bathroom, but you know, it's on the Switch, so you could just play it wherever you want. Bathroom's a terrible place because you'll forget that you're in there for as long as you are. You might have trouble standing up after a while. That might be a bit TMI for the show, but you know, what are you going to do? That's how I do it on the show. Control-wise, I had some gripes with the controls. I don't know if it's because I was using the Switch, you know, with the Joy-Cons attached. You are able to hit up and down to switch. It's like a quick swap for your weapons or your equipment. And I would always seem to accidentally hit up or down and switch from my weapon. So I'm trying to hit people, and then I switch to my health potion, and I'm mashing the button to try killing someone, and then I accidentally switch to my health potions, and I use like all of them unintended, which was a bummer. There's also a heavy emphasis on blocking in the game, which I don't know. I'm not good at blocking in games. I'd rather, in my eyes, the best defense is a good offense. So I'd rather just kill everyone before they could attack me. But you need to use the block in this game. There's enemies that shoot orbs that stun you, and you need to block them so that they don't stun you. Or enemies that are just constantly shooting arrows or magic at you. You need to use the block button in this game if you expect to go far in the game at all. Overall, though, for $7, for as addictive and fun as this game is, I gotta give it a hearty buy it. I really enjoyed this one. I hope Taeon brings this to other platforms as well. Really, really cool game, and I buy it. It's good. I dig it.
You kitten murderer.
I only did it the one time because my guilt stopped me. It's a lot of fun, though. Murdered kittens or not, it's a lot of fun. Next game is called Assault Android Cactus, developed and published by Witchbeam. It released November 7th on the Xbox One for $14.99. Assault Android Cactus is an arcade-style twin-stick shooter set in a vivid sci-fi universe. Junior Constable Cactus is outside her pay grade when she responds to a distress call and ends up stranded on a crippled space freighter under attack by its own robot workers. When you're running on battery, make every second count. Cole, what did you think of this game?
This game is absolutely crazy. just straight up crazy in every kind of good way, though. Like, I did not expect to enjoy Assault Android Cactus the way that I did. I genuinely did. I thought, okay, it's a twin stick shooter, and I've heard good things about it. But I'm friends with some people that will play any kind of twin stick shooter. Like, they thought the twin stick mini game in Stardew Valley was better than Stardew Valley. So their opinion on twin sticks goes a little over the top. So I was like, I'll play it, but I'm not expecting to be like, oh my god, that's the best thing ever. No, really, this game was a lot of fun.
And I've been raving about this one for a while. The first interview I did with Sanat and Mishra of Witchbeam was over 2 years ago. And then we just did another one on the last episode. And I'm thrilled that it finally came to Xbox One.
I'm glad. I'm glad it's there. Damn them. I'm glad it's there. I'm glad it's getting a chance because it's genuinely a good game. You know, there's tons of these kind of little games out here, and you just go, it's another twin stick. But this one actually changes some things up. You mentioned the battery. There's no life limit in this game. If you die, you tap A till you come back. The battery drains slowly over the course of the level, but as you kill the robots, there is a chance for extra battery charges to drop. So you can pick them up and you can keep going. Even if you've died 5 times, 10 times, 100 times, as long as you keep picking up those batteries and recharging your main battery, you can continue on until you beat the level. So it pays to take your time, but be conscious of where that battery level is at the same time, if that makes sense. You don't want to rush in and, you know, get your killing done trying to snag a battery if your battery is low. You want to try to take it a little easier and maybe try to maneuver around, because if you go down, your battery might drain before you can bring yourself back up to get the charge. Okay. The game level designs is probably one of the most interesting that I've seen for a twin stick as well. In addition to the whole switching things up with the battery and you can die as many times as you want and not have to start over. But the level designs themselves are incredibly unique. There are levels where, you know, you are on spinning discs and they will switch up midway and then they will switch and go back, or another area will stop rotating, or you have to, you know, maneuver around a variety of obstacles that are ever changing throughout the level as you take on the different, you know, enemies that are attacking you as well. In addition to that, there are some levels that will just straight up, the floor disappears when you are not there. And you don't know if you're going to walk into an area where you might fall through the floor because it doesn't show up until you get closer to it. This also slows you down and keeps you from just barreling through the enemies and taking everything out right away. There are a variety of different characters. Even though it's called Assault Android Cactus, there's a whole crew of Assault Androids that you can play as.
I think there's eight or nine total, something like that,
nine. And you start off with a handful of them, and then you unlock a few more as you go on. All of them are different class types, and so they allow for different types of gameplay. For example, Cactus just has a regular rifle, and they each have their own special ability, which can actually be spammed. There's no really rules as far as the ability goes. It does have to charge up for a few seconds, but you can spam it pretty frequently to take out large chunks out of enemies. It makes the constant onslaught a lot easier to deal with. In addition to Cactus, one of the other characters that I like to use the most was Holly, and she actually has homing rockets.
Hell yeah.
They are shorter range, so you can't like stay around the edge of the map and just shoot and hope you hit something. You do have to get at least within a medium distance of the enemies for the homing rockets to find them and take them out. But those homing rockets made the game a million times easier. There's also one that you unlock later on that has a laser beam, and you can stay way out on the edge of the map, but it doesn't do as much damage as, say, you know, the rockets or the shotgun that required, Coral's shotgun requires you to be really close and do, but she can do large amounts of damage while she's in close. And just like the main weapons, there's a secondary weapon for every one of them that, you know, like I said, you can spam, but it does have to recharge every little bit. And that is different for each one too. Holly's kind of looks like a cannonball that's flaming that just barrels through a large portion of enemies. There's a plasma shield for one. There's a flamethrower for another. So there's just a variety of ways to play the different characters. In addition to that, there's power-ups. You can get, extra bots that will swim around you and shoot for you, like drones. There's, a stasis power-up that pauses all the enemies that are currently on the board. There's the wings that let you move faster. So there is a good variety of ways to play. And with the way that a lot of the boards change, there's a lot of variety in that as well.
And then we can't forget the EX modes, which I think might be some of the coolest stuff in the game, is as you get through stages, you earn points that you can spend on, like, you know, artwork and other various unlockables. And then they have an EX mode section where they'll give you crazy stuff, like, you know, crazy powerful weapons that won't let you get on leaderboards. But then they'll have other things like J.J. Abrams mode, where everything has insane lens flare.
Or they and there's a small head, or well, it says normal head.
Yeah, normal.
So you have
head
like a
mode.
Normal head to body ratio size, because they have typically large heads anyway.
They even have an unlockable first person mode, which is surprisingly intense.
Yeah, it really is, because you can't see what's coming up behind you. You're just like, okay, well, I hope there's nothing chasing me down that I don't know of.
And then I could say now 4K HDR. Holy shit, this game looks great on the X.
It really does.
Oh my God, it
looks
insane.
It's gorgeous anyway. It really is pretty.
Yeah.
Like, you don't typically see twin sticks that are vibrantly colored, and I don't want to be stereotypical and say it's girlied up because the main characters are female or any of that, but typically you see the grimy, dingy kind of shoot 'em, you know, shoot 'em up bullet hells or whatever you want to call them with these twin sticks. And it was refreshing because everything was just bright and there were colors. It wasn't dimly lit. It was just, there was a lot to take in visually. And it was a really refreshing experience, if you will.
Agreed. So $15. What is your verdict?
Buy this game. I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to play more of it.
I agree.
When I'm not being tasked with playing other shooters. If I get my Xbox time back.
If. Or if D isn't too busy playing the Hunter still.
Well, because he's taken over Call of Duty too. Like, we were fighting. I was like, no, you're further in the campaign than I am, and I've got to review it. Get the Xbox.
The fuck out of here. Take the dogs and get the fuck out of here. Oh, man. Next game to talk about is called Stayin' Alive, developed and published by Indie Gala. It releases sometime this year on Steam Early Access. We don't have a date or a price yet. This is a very early preview of the game. Do your best to die or save your enemies from death in this frantic team multiplayer game about health issues. Death is in the air. Dark Mika covered this one for us. She sent in an email and, let's check this one out. She says, Stayin' Alive is a twisted multiplayer versus game. Be forewarned that if you're a snowflake, fuck off now. It's your only warning. You won't like this. And there we go. You get to play as one of two sides, the saviors and the suiciders. The suiciders are, well, they're old folks. The saviors are staff, and the game takes place in an old folks care facility. Told you it was twisted. The old folks move around in wheelchairs, letting them move rather quickly. They have to find different items to put together so they can then use to combine them and kill themselves. To stop these old folks from finding their eternal rest, like the scum they are, these orderlies will grab tools to use when the old folks have made a weapon to stop them from dying, for the moment. They will also grab sedatives which allow them to, you guessed it, sedate the old folks so they can be wheeled into padded rooms where they will never taste the bliss of death's embrace. Oh my God, this game sounds incredible. Now, as stated, the old folks have wheelchairs. This lets them move rather quickly. The orderlies, though, don't. They have to walk and can use stamina to run, which recharges over time. The old folks have to put things together, like gas cans and lighters, to make improvised Molotov cocktails to roast themselves with. There's also putting together a pair of shears together, or mixing a toothbrush and a razor to cut themselves open with. There's a handful of ways to kill yourself, all requiring mixing items you find around the place together. There's no shortage of items either. You'll find a dozen or more of each item, so you're fine. And they all respawn immediately after being used, granted another spot, but still, as such, there's always items available. The orderlies have it slightly easier on this bit. The objects they need don't require any putting together. Just pick them up and go. And these items also respawn the same way. The great thing about the respawns is supposedly they only respawn in places where people aren't able to currently see, which is good, so shit's not just popping up right in front of you. This isn't a one-and-done type mode. You get points for killing yourself and or for putting some old crazy old codger in a padded room. After a couple of seconds, the suicider respawns to go die again or to be placed in the crazy box again. Sadly, there's currently only two maps available. I've only been able to see two suiciders, but it's a 4v4 game, so I assume there's going to be more old folks. You can play the game solo. It has bots, and it fills up the team however much you want. There's 1v1 up to 4v4, so even if you go solo, you can play the game. The music is amusing, not sure why, but I really like the music in the game. There are some pretty major drawbacks. The graphics are not great. It's very cartoony looking in its color palette and not very realistic looking. The maps are fairly small, but again, it's 4v4 max, so that's expected. Everything feels very skewed to the suiciders, as it could be really hard to find sedatives, which are the only way to get a point as a savior, as that's the only way to wheel them into the crazy box. The AI is finicky, but they're working on it. Sometimes as a savior, it'll run around while you kill yourself over and over, and then other times it'll sedate you immediately after spawning a few times in a row. As a suicider, it's a bitch. It'll try to kill itself if you're not in sight regardless of where you are, which is good, but if it decides to do it when you can see it, then it'll get a point. It knows where the items are and has calculated that you can't run back, grab the item needed to save them, and get back to them before they die, which sucks. Luckily, you're riding their ass so often that it's not really much of an issue, but it did happen a couple of times, and when it did, it pissed me off. Now, the game is fun, but I don't know how well it's going to sell based on the visuals. There's not a lot of variety in the game, so it could easily go stale fairly fast. But had you shown me Team Fortress 2, I would have said the same thing, and it's well-loved even still. I would say try the demo when it's out, because they have a demo on Steam. If you like it, totally go into it, as they're currently working on more improvements, so you can only make it better by playing it. And I do want to remind everyone, this is not fully available to purchase yet. It is going to be out soon. It will be in early access, so this is something that, you know, the concerns about content, they will be adding more to it. So it
has some time.
It definitely sounds like something to keep your eye on. What the hell was that game Pappy always used to talk about when he was still on the show? Who's Your Daddy? It sounds a lot like that in how it plays. So I'm excited to hear more about that one. It sounds pretty.
It does sound interesting.
It sounds clinically insane and like it needs to be put down.
It sounds like my future. Like I'm going to be in a nursing home and I'm just going to be like, fuck this. I'm going to make a Molotov cocktail.
Nice.
Because I'm going to be crazy and old. I'm already old. I'm already crazy too. Never mind. This is my day.
God. Looking at the info on Steam, they do hope to stay in early access until sometime in 2018, I'm sure. Full game is going to have more modes, collectibles, more locations. Online play is available. So it sounds like there's going to be plenty of content for those concerned when it's ready to go.
Good.
All right, and finally, last game that you're here to talk about is called 911 Operator, developed by Jutsu Games, published by Code Horizon. It released November 8th on Xbox One for $14.99. Take on the role of an emergency dispatcher who has to rapidly deal with the incoming reports. Your task is not to just pick up the calls, but also react appropriately to the situation. Keep in mind that the person on the other side of the line might turn out to be a dying daughter's father, or an unpredictable terrorist, or just a prankster. Can you handle all of this? Cole, could you handle it?
handled it. Yay! I did really well. Yay.
Yay.
911 Operator is a very simulation-heavy emergency services-based strategy game. You have the option between career mode and free play. And so for the sake of the review, I'm going to focus more on career mode, even though the free play is basically just career mode without limits, as it would be implied. You start the game with a map of a town. And you have access to the fire squad, the ambulance squad, and the police squad for this town. You will receive calls and situation alerts, and it is your job to send the corresponding squads for those 911 calls and those emergencies out to respond to the calls. But as the intro says, not every call is as it seems. You can start at the beginning of career mode, especially with calls that are pretty mundane. There's a tree in the road, or there's, an electrical problem, you know, on the other side of town, send over a fire truck to work on it. Or there's a cat in a tree, which you can ignore. You don't have to send anybody for the cat in the tree. As you respond to these different emergency situations, you receive reputation points. Certain types of calls are worth more reputation points. Responding to prank calls will drop your reputation, and so will not responding in time to important calls or not responding properly to an important call. However, if you do respond properly, or if you ignore a prank call, then your reputation goes up. The goal is to finish each shift with your reputation in the positive. If the police catch a speeder and write a speeding ticket, for example, then you earn money for your emergency services so that you can upgrade their equipment and stuff with what you earn from pulling in fines and things like that. However, you run a risk. If you do that, you may tie up a police squad with, with a speeding vehicle or running a red light or something mundane, like a traffic stop, when you get a call for a terrorist event, for example. And then you don't have police that you can send after the terrorists. The events, as they pop up, the situations, they have timers on them. So you have a pretty liberal amount of time for responding to most of these events. Some of them do become a little more dire, especially later in career mode when you are in Los Angeles, I believe it was, and there is an earthquake. And so then you receive calls relating to that earthquake, but not everybody that's calling about the earthquake is even still being honest about it. And they may say, there's a sinkhole over here and there's a car stuck in it. And you may send, your crew over there and there might not actually have been a sinkhole. So it's all about, as a 911 operator, asking the right kind of questions and giving out the right kind of information and receiving the right kind of information and then relaying that to the emergency services so that they respond to these events properly. I was actually really impressed with the detail put into this as far as the simulation aspect goes. There are just like situations that pop up on their own. And this would be kind of simulated by when cops would say, call into a dispatch office and say, oh, well, we're going to pull somebody over for speeding. We saw a speeder or something like that. But then there are also the legit 911 calls that come through. These are actually voice acted out calls between your character and the person calling.
Ooh, is the voice acting well done? I'd imagine something like this, the voice acting would be fairly important.
It really is. And there were some moments where, you're kind of jaw dropped and you forget you're really just playing a game. The game suggests when you start it up that you play with headphones even, because there are details in the backgrounds of these calls that can help you decide if this is a legitimate call or not. And I remember being really shook up after one of the calls come through, and there's just a man on the other end of the line, and he's screaming, my baby girl, they've killed her. She's dead. Oh my God, my baby girl. And you're just like, what? What am I supposed to do here? And then if you carry on with the call, you find out that she's dead from a drug overdose.
Jesus.
And so it's very realistic, and it can be a little shocking if you're not familiar with, you know, the severity of, I mean, everybody knows 911 is, you know, operators and dispatch. This is a serious issue, but I think it can be eye-opening for people who haven't been a part of an emergency services crew. A little bit of story time, but my husband was actually an assistant chief for our local fire department in our tiny little town. And so we had the radio and we spoke with dispatch a lot. And I often would relay, you know, messages from dispatch to him, you know, when they would call, because sometimes situations like in the case of a drug overdose or something would be sensitive enough that they couldn't put it out over the radio because anybody with a scanner can pick it up. Yeah. And so they would just call, you know, individual firefighters at their home and speak with them about what had happened and send them out to respond to these calls. And it brought back a lot of crazy memories from that time when he was a firefighter and having to, you know, judge, because we did get calls that were absolutely bullshit. And then you got ones that were incredibly serious. You know, there's for every, you know, kid that wants to call and ask if your refrigerator's running, there's one where there's a 2-year-old choking on, you know, her dinner. And the game did an incredible job.
You need some thick skin if you're going to be able to do this game.
Yeah. Because, and you have to give them credit because they really put a lot of thought and effort into scripting these calls. And like I said, you can even, you know, listen to the background of the calls, and it helps give details as to whether or not this is a serious event or not. There's one particular call, without giving away a spoiler for it, it seems like it's incredibly mundane. She's just calling about her neighbor's TV being too loud. And you can choose to ignore it.
Is this one of those things where, like, she's giving hints that, like, something's really wrong? Like, the people who...
There's a couple of different ones like that. It turns out in this particular one, the neighbor didn't know that something was really wrong. She's just calling to complain about the TV. The TV's loud and people are moving furniture late at night. And you're like, lady, go to bed, you know? And then if you choose to ignore it, at the end of the shift, you get a workup where you can go through and check all the calls and get updates on what happened during those calls. And it'll tell you right down to this officer was injured, or this person was reported dead, or, you know, and then you just, sometimes you can be like, oh, I ignored the guy calling for pizza, but it really turned out that he was being held hostage by terrorists, you know? And you're like, shit.
That's the example I was going to bring up, is that I've heard stories of people who were being, you know, held hostage, and mm-hmm. they call 911 and order a pizza, mm-hmm. and the lady's like, you realize this is 911, and they're just like, medium pepperoni, just like trying to keep it and sound like a normal call. It's like, hey, something's wrong.
There are even calls that will come in where it's just silent. You can hear background noise, but it's silent. And then you have to, you know, decide, are you just going to be like, look, don't prank call with just silence. Or are you going to say, you know, press any button on your phone if you're in danger. And then you hear beep and you're just like, okay, shit, now what? You know, you know, and sometimes you can do that and nothing happens and it's just a prank call. And for every time it's not, there's the possibility that it is. And then you have to ask, you know, are you injured? you know, press one for yes, two for no. You know, do they have weapons? One for yes, two for no. And you have to sit and listen. How does it beep? And thankfully, you know, even though there's a lot of emphasis put on the audio aspect of the game, there is a chat dialogue that comes up on the side when you're taking the phone calls. So if you are hearing impaired, you're not going to miss out. Like I said, you might miss some of the little minor cues in the background audio, but you do have the chat log at least to get the gist of the phone call.
Nice. The last thing I want to know about the game is that one of the features is that you could play on any city in the world, and that there's thousands of cities from all over the world, and they make it a point to like clarify that like city is like larger cities.
So well, I would like to clarify like a tiny on that.
So let's hear it. What is it?
I found my tiny little nobody town.
Nice.
My town has a population of 42.
Well, there you go.
And I typed that in, and it was the second option. It was right there. And I clicked it. It was kind of funny because I live in a no man's land town. We have a convenience store, a school, and a post office, and that's it.
And a bunch of dogs.
We don't even, like, you hear a one light town. We don't even have one stoplight. Oh, we don't even have an intersection. We have a three way. Intersection in the middle of our town.
On the store page, it says the term city is used within the meaning of open street map service and relates to urban areas described as city or town therein. So I guess they mm-hmm. have that there just in case it's like, oh, well, classified as a borough or something.
Yeah. So. But I was really surprised. They found our little no man's land town. They downloaded the map. I will say, though, like I said, it was funny because we only have those three major. We have the school and the convenience store. But it was funny because it was giving calls and it was like, oh, there's a fire at the parking garage. And then it would give me an address. These were actual addresses in my town popping up, by the way. They weren't for what the calls were saying they were for, but they were actual addresses in my town.
Nice.
And there was even one that came up on my street.
Nice. Did you go
and
check
so
it out?
I did. I did. It was a trash can fire.
Sweet.
I think is what it was. I even took a screenshot of it because I was just like, oh my God, look, I'm famous.
That's really cool.
But I was really tickled by it. I just thought it was just the neatest little add-on. And I imagine it's more fun if you live in a big area and the idea of there being a gang war, you know, three streets over is a little more believable, but it was funny and cool to see that I could even just download the map for my area.
Nice. So all that said, $15. What is your verdict on this one?
This is an absolute buy it. This is a lot of fun. And it
interesting.
There are some, like I said, there's some touchy moments. And if you've, you know, experienced trauma, or, you know, in like a drug overdose, or if you've been the victim of a terrorist hostage situation, you might probably want to steer clear if you don't want flashbacks. But otherwise, they did a really good job with this. And this is a lot of fun if you like simulators.
It's really cool. I imagine something like this might have been niche enough that it would only get like a recommended try it. But I might have to grab this one myself. It sounds really cool.
I did consider it too on the niche aspect. But then I thought, well, it's very similar to Plague in its play style. That enough that I thought it was easily accessible to anybody, that it would be playable if you just wanted to pick it up and hang into it. So it was enjoyable and I had a lot of fun, and I think I'm like 5% from finishing a couple of achievements that I'm just going to tear through when people stop inviting me to other games.
Nice. Well, Cole, thank you so much for joining and covering all these games with me. Always good having you on the show, and I know you'll be back again soon. Do you have any final thoughts to sum everything up?
Play Call of Duty and give it a chance, but also play 911 Operator and Assault Android Cactus and give them a chance.
And play Talomir, too, and then pick up 8-Bit Adventure Anthology and
yes!
Check out Staying Alive when that could. Just play games.
Just play games and enjoy them.
All right, finally tonight, our good friend Tim Akibis is joining us. Tim, how are you doing?
Good. Just good. We went over this.
We went over this before we started recording. I'm asking you officially now. On the record.
You know, I'm pretty good, let's say.
Pretty good.
Yeah, my mood is upgraded since we started recording. And Now we shall plod forward.
You're just excited to talk to me. I know. It's okay.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
You're here to talk about two games today to close out the show. And the first one is called Spellspire, developed and published by 10 Tons. Released November 9th on the Switch for $9.99. Spellspire is a thrilling mashup of word game and action role-playing game. Pick letters from a grid to spell words and shoot them from your wand as spells. The longer the word, the bigger the blast. Will you reach the top of the Spellspire? And what will you find? Tim, what did you find?
I have not made it to the top of the Spellspire quite yet. It's a big spire. I aspire to make it to the top of the spire, but it is a tall spire.
It is. So what'd you think?
Yes. It's pretty good as far as like simple little word games go. So yeah, they drop you into a level. The levels are not that, I mean, I guess it depends how long it takes to get through the levels by how good you are at spelling words. So either way, so you got your dude, he marches left to right and encounters enemies, and your job, you have a little bank of letters. It's 10 generally letters that you spell out words with. And as you spell out words, like as it says in the description, you blast them. I mean, it's a word scramble game. There's many word scramble games, and they kind of just, you know, arrange it in different ways. I'm trying to think what the last one I really played was. I feel like it was on like a 4x4 grid that I played a ton of. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I can never remember the one on iOS that I played like earlier this year, but either way. So yeah, the twist on this game kind of comes in that you have a bit of character progression and that you earn gold from beating levels. And then you spend that gold to upgrade your character with better weapons and equipment. So you can take more hits, deal more damage. Naturally, I would go after anything that could deal damage first.
Because it's good to kill things.
Yeah, it's good. That's the best defense is a good offense in this game. They can't hit you if they're already dead. Because
I was saying that earlier in the show, legitimate. Like one of the other games I reviewed earlier, I was saying, you know, blocking was very important in that game. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not a fan of blocking. I'd rather just take these bitches out before they get to me.
Yeah, well, there's legit, you know, like you have a few seconds before an enemy attacks you to unleash spells on them. So if you do enough damage with your wand, you can spell out words fast enough, you'll kill them before that's even an issue. I mean, there was a lot of levels where I was spelling out words so fast, I'd have to wait for my dude to like to mosey his way over the next guy to obliterate. But it's not always like that. It starts off, you know, pretty easy and ramps up. If you fail on a level, it gives you a different word bank. So it's not, you can't just be like, I know more words this time. Nope. Nope. Sorry. Gotta do something different. So this game offers you either like, you know, controls, traditional controls, or you can play it touchscreen, which my God, you should fucking play it touchscreen. You should not play it on a TV with standard controls. Like it is just, it was originally, I'm guessing, made for phones.
I know I covered it on the Xbox, and I kind of want to grab the game again just to have that touchscreen input.
Yeah. It's just tapping on the letters instead of navigating with a controller. I did try it both ways because I was just kind of curious how it would feel. I review a lot of Switch games on this show. Most of the time I'm playing in handheld mode. I think Mario Odyssey was the first game since like Mario Kart that I actually played on my TV on my Switch.
I might be the same. I think that and Breath of the Wild are like two of the only ones I've played on the TV.
Yeah, but that's still, like most of my Odyssey play has been off screen. Besides the point, it's just how I play the Switch and how I love the Switch, as it were. But Spellspire, yeah. That's basically the game is like you get gold, you buy upgrades, you get stronger, you mosey your way up the tower. There's going to come a point where you're going to have to upgrade your character in order to get through a level. You just won't be able to spell words fast enough to take down an enemy because they'll just obliterate you with one shot. And that's, you know, that's the point at which you might need to go back and grind. So here's a thing in that after you beat a level, it gives you like a challenge for that level, which is generally getting through without getting hit very much, with your health over a certain level. And then you get you accomplish that goal, and then you get a star, and like getting stars, a certain amount of stars will unlock more stuff for you to buy, and of course you get gold along the way too. I kind of wish that those challenges were just available right off the bat, that if you just hit the challenge, it just gave you the stuff instead of making you go back and play the levels again. Like, they still give you different word banks, but it's like, it felt kind of like a little bit just like busy work. Yeah. A little bit. I was just like, just, you know, make that like, just have that goal on there and you can shoot for it the first time and shoot your way up the tower. but you know, blame that on its phone game roots, I suppose. Where's my goddamn notes? There they are. Yeah. Yeah, I was bummed sometimes when I got through a level when I was in like a really good spelling groove, but I'd already killed everything. That's kind of, I don't know.
You're like, it's I know good, more words. No,
yeah,
more
like, guys. Oh, I got more words to spell. Come on. But yeah, it's just, it's a fun, decent, like word spelly time waster game. I don't like, I was playing it in pretty short bursts. Like, it's not something you're going to sit down and pour hours into it at a time. I don't think like you're going to play for a 5-10 minute session, maybe 15 minutes, like, you know, blow through some levels and then, you know, do whatever. Which is fine. You're playing this on a Switch, presumably in a portable fashion. My only, you know, kind of caveat is that if you have a smartphone, it's free on a smartphone. You know, that comes with the caveat of ads and in-app purchases, but that might be a better place to get it. But at the same time, you can just spend $10 on the Switch and have the whole game and have it on your Switch. So,
and a bigger screen.
And a bigger screen. Unless you have some kind of, well, I mean, you could have a tablet, could have an iPad or something too, but you know, whatever.
Or you could play it on your TV too. So
you could, but that's up to you, the user. it seems like a game that you should probably check out if you're into word games. It's what? It's a tenner on the Switch.
Yep. So $10. What's your verdict on this one?
Yeah, maybe that's like a try it right there. You might want it. You might want, I mean, like, you could just download it for free on your phone or whatever and check it out first and then kind of figure out whether you want to pay for a full version on the Switch. I guess that's kind of the beauty question mark of it on being a phone game, is that you can actually decide for yourself, but you should check it out. You should check it out for sure. And then you can kind of make the decision for yourself whether you want to plunk down the $10 for it on the Switch, but try it for sure.
Make absolutely the decision for yourself. What is this? A review?
Yeah, I'm just saying, no, I could just say, fuck this game and move on with your life, but that would be a lie. You should check it out.
You really should. I love this game so much.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you enjoyed it as well. And you have one more to talk about, and that is Morphite, developed and published by Blowfish Studios, Crescent Moon Games, and We're 5 Games. This one released November 2nd on the Switch for $14.99. This is the story of Myra Kale, a young woman whose life takes a sudden turn when a simple mission develops into an epic interstellar journey, revealing her mysterious past in relation to a coveted substance called Morphite. Tim, what is Morphite?
What is Morphite? So Morphite is a kind of like casual space exploration-y game. It has a really distinct kind of art style to it with like a lot of bold colorings, not a lot of like very detailed textures. It's not like a super fast paced actiony game. You're going to go to these kind of, you know, there's like a galaxy, a vast galaxy, seems rather vast galaxy, which you fuel your way around in your ship that you can explore, drop down on these planets, where you go down and sometimes there's creatures to shoot. Sometimes there's like ruins to explore. There is always lots of stuff to scan. So this might sound like a little bit like No Man's Sky, a little bit, if you've heard of that game or seen it. And when you look at this game, you're like, oh man, that kind of looks like No Man's Sky. But Morphite is probably going to be better for most people, I think.
I've heard that from a lot of people, that people saying this is what No Man's Sky should have been.
I don't know if it's what it should have been. Like, it's definitely pared down. But, cause they, you know, No Man's Sky released as like a full-fledged, super hyped $60 game last year, and people were pissed because there was problems and it was boring, maybe. I don't know. It didn't quite meet the promise of what people expected from it. But, you know, Morphite is a much smaller scale game that is, you know, like $15 or something like that. And the world's like, the beautiful moment in No Man's Sky is when you enter atmosphere from space. Like, that is really cool pretty much every time you do it. Like, the way you just transition up and down from a planet. You don't have that in Morphite. You say, I'm going to this planet. Your ship lands. Like, you're not piloting it through space directly down onto the planet and doing all of that stuff. Like, it cuts out a lot of in between. The planets are not as huge or expansive. But the thing is, in No Man's Sky, there really wasn't actually a lot to find or do there anyway, so who cares? So you have kind of these smaller, more discrete planets to get in there, scan, do your shit, and get out. It feels like there's much better, a more coherent story and direction to Morphite, where, you know, No Man's Sky was this kind of vague, get to the center of the galaxy, like, it was kind of tough to know exactly what your next objective was, whereas this game is like, it's this. This is your objective. Here you go. You should go here. This is what you should be doing. And there's stuff that you can go off on the side along the way. There's side quests. There's other planets to explore. There's like little suggestions in your menu as to kind of like what you should be thinking about. So it's a more compact, directed, digestible experience. More of a game, really, I think. It's more gamey than just this, you know, what No Man's Sky is. And that game has evolved a lot over the course of the past year. I don't mean to bag on it. I enjoyed it quite a bit at the time, though I had to stop playing because of a horrible glitch where my ship got trapped under the surface of a planet and I couldn't get out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was bad. Yeah, I got like shot down in space, and then it respawned my broken ship on the planet's surface, underwater, under the ground. I could not escape. I could not do anything.
Helpful.
Yeah, I couldn't. I was like trying to like clip through the ground either to get out or like gather some resources to fix my ship, and it just wasn't happening, and I just gave up, and it really murdered my momentum for the game. That didn't happen to me in Morphite, so hey, points.
Yay!
But all that said, and like the structure of the game is cool and whatnot, like it's still a little dull. It's a little clunky to play. Just like the controls, like your weapon toggle weapons. It's like the left bumper. It's just L. It's L and ZR. L and L. L and ZL. Right. If I'm not wrong.
I hate how Nintendo has to have their own stupid little button names.
I just can't remember which one's which, and I guess Z is the ones on the back, because that's Z was the under button on the N64.
They're buttons and triggers, but yeah, I don't give a fuck.
It's like, yeah, you hit L, and then like a menu pops up, and then you got to select your weapon, and you're, you know, right from the start, you're switching back and forth between your pistol and your scanner, and it's kind of like, doing this, like maybe, I don't know, maybe you should just hit L, and you just kind of go cycle through a wheel of your weapons or something, or you push a button and a wheel comes up on the screen, or you, because usually I'm used to like bumpers just kind of cycling through things, instead of like menu, just made it a little stilted. Just kind of your character, like the character movement felt weird. I should say that I had some pretty severe motion sickness playing this in handheld mode. It was actually much easier on me playing it on the screen. And maybe that was just a matter of me like holding, you know, that screen size close to my face and trying to aim in first person. But I don't know, if you do have motion sensitivity issues, that might be a concern. That varies heavily from person to person, and also in terms of like what actually sets them off. Maybe not a portable game if you're really motion sick. Maybe not a game at all if you get motion sick. Who knows?
Don't take it in the car, pretty much.
Oh my god, please don't. There's dials for sensitivity. I turned the sensitivity down pretty far as well, just to plot around. But, you know, it's tough. it's like a decent space exploration game, but it still has kind of a lot of the same problems as No Man's Sky, and that like scanning isn't really terribly exciting. Like the combat isn't all that great. Like some of the random encountery stuff that happens, like when you're in space or whatever, is kind of, you know, not very interesting and somewhat meaningless in the end as well. So it kind of falls into some of the same traps, but at the same time, it's a much smaller digestible package.
And
so
it's only $15 instead of 60.
So, and you know, there's not a lot of stuff quite like it either. So like, you know, despite its flaws, it's still like a pretty interesting game to check out.
So 15 bucks, what's your verdict?
It's kind of like either like a fuck it, why not? Or like a maybe wait for the sale. We don't have that category, but that might be, you know, wait for it to go down a few bucks maybe. But I'm like waffling all over here.
Sounds like a try it.
Yeah, maybe try it is that, where we're at.
That's why we have a try it. For. It's like an all-encompassing kind of deal. Where it's
all-encompassing, like sort of like, it could go either way. Yeah, that's this game. It's definitely not like a fuck it or deny it. That's what we call it on here, right? Yeah. It's definitely not one of those. There's definitely some really interesting stuff going on, in spite of its flaws.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds entertaining. I know it's on a bunch of other platforms as well, so if you're not a Switch owner, find what it's on and play it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, thanks for coming on and talking about these two games. That is the end of the show. Thanks again to Kunal for coming on and hanging out with me, and for Cole for doing a bunch of reviews as well. And Tim, to you, thank you. You're an awesome person, so thank you. Do you have any final words to end the show?
Oh, man. No, I don't. Sorry. I got nothing. Yeah.
You're letting me down,
I
got man.
I should have known. I was like, you always ask. And then I'm like,
I even told you, you're ending the show.
Yeah, I'm ending the show. Man, I don't know. Have a nice weekend. If you got a 3-day weekend because of Veterans Day, enjoy it.
All right.
I spent my last 2 3-day weekends traveling to North Carolina and New Jersey, respectively. So I am thrilled to be staying home for a 3-day weekend for the first time since like August.
Nice.
Yeah.
Here's a good question that you can end the show with. AJ Styles.
AJ Styles. I haven't watched SmackDown yet. Did something happen?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know what happened. It's like it was going out on Twitter like Tuesday afternoon, like major spoiler for SmackDown. And I'm like, well, gee, what could it be? because it's like I'm thinking to myself, I'm like the way they've been kind of like setting up matches lately and doing like these dream matches with just like throwing them out all willy nilly. Like here's Cena fighting Shinsuke Nakamura and here's Cena fighting Roman Reigns. And like we're going to run Randy versus Nakamura on TV and whatnot. I'm like, you know, I think they're going to try to do AJ Styles versus Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series. I think they would want to do that because it sounds awesome.
It does. Sounds so much better than anything at all.
The championship.
Yes. It sounds so much better than anything at all involving Jinder Mahal.
Oh, man. I'm not on the Jinder train. I was for a while, but then like after basically since SummerSlam on, I'm like, okay, why are we still doing this? Why are we still doing this? Like, stop it.
I was never on it. He, to me, even still, he's been what, champ for how many months? And, you know, he's beaten all these people. To me, he's still just a shitty jobber that wrestles horribly, has terrible promos, has no presence at all. The only thing cool about him is his entrance video where like the screen rolls out. Cool. That's it. Yeah.
I really like the entrance. He's done some okay promos, but he just like some have been okay, but a lot of them fall into that rote, like, you people hate me because I speak languages and I do that. It's like Cesaro speaks like 6 languages. People fucking love Cesaro. Come on,
what,
man.
What you
and
said
like, now is, I'm going to speak to my people in my language, a Punjabi. And
that
then
is,
he does
that's
that.
Every promo he has done, every single one was exactly what you just said.
Like the first,
fuck that know. Guy.
It was like, I mean, obviously it was shocking at the time and it was like, oh man, this is crazy. I just wish they'd had him like, I don't know, win some matches without interference, just like a few more on the top level, just to kind of establish himself a little bit more. And maybe it's just, I don't know, man.
Like, maybe people wouldn't still think of him as a jobber who lost to Hornswoggle last year.
Oh God. Yeah. And they got he's going to be champion again. Cause they got an India tour coming up or he's going to like win it on the tour.
I fucking hope not. They need to just,
he's going to be a 2-time champion before the end of the year.
Probably, but I hope not.
But I think AJ Styles is going to be a 3-time champ by the end of the Rumble.
Fuck. Yeah. So final words, man. AJ Styles,
WrestleMania Styles versus Knack, WrestleMania. Oh, God. Calling it.
That'd be so
dude.
Good.
You fucking saw the Jericho Omega announcement, I'm sure.
Oh my God, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was great. That was great. I'm like, these guys are shit talking each other too much to not be having a match. And I know they like each other too, which is the thing from him being on Jericho's podcast. I'm like, oh man, yeah, that's gonna be a cool match.
I think the final words is that I really need to have another wrestling show soon.
Thank you. Thank you.